Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast. Am I George Weedman?
Are you?
I think I am.
Yes.
Usually I am.
Aren't you Bunny?
You're not. You're Jimmy Belikoff. I am also Bunny. We also have Mad Visual as usual, but also this week is another transient scavenger from the Zaibatsu is with us. Wooly is following up on the same message I sent Matt, and he's in here. Hello, Wooly. How are
Hello.
You?
I've Hello. I've invaded like a Dark Souls character. Yeah. I'm glowing red. I'm here to steal your souls. What's going on?
Tight. That's a unique guesting perspective that we can have.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm all about the jolly cooperation, though. Usually we don't get in fights with guests. They tend to make it out alive. Although I don't know, there was that one time where the fucking satchel.
Satchel.
I still don't have him on my forgiveness list.
Well, hopefully we can get along, but if we don't, I've got some really good items to drop, so you can have at it.
I mean, if we didn't manage to get into a fist fight last week when literally everybody disagreed on the witness, I think we'd be fine this week.
Oh, yeah. This is something boy. We could actually go into, because I remember when Matt was here, we were all just kind of starting. Jimmy and Matt were way more into it than I was, but I think at that point, no one had beaten it, actually, or am I
no,
wrong about
that? No, I was
that?
Like... 5 hours in max. I'm like 30 now.
Well, we might be able to like retread some of that ground, because I played.
Did you beat it though?
I don't know what you Not guys yet. Have thought about it. I haven't been listening to the podcast, and I didn't know if you guys got in fights like we did in here.
I'm prepared to just quietly sit by while people hate it if need be.
We didn't get into any fights, but Pat did report to me that apparently our favorite lovable curmudgeon George hates the witness and everything that's fun in the world. So,
oh my god, do you like it?
I love it.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, you're crazy.
I love
Thank
it.
Thank the Lord.
And the we just took a moment to all like guffaw when he's like, yeah, apparently Bunny hates the witness. And we're like, of course he hates it.
Why do you guys think I hate everything fun? The witness is not fun. The witness is math homework.
No, it's not. There's nothing math about it.
It's geometry homework. There you go.
I'm somewhere in between where I hate that I love it. Yeah, like it's one of those things where it's like, Simon, I hate the witness. And then I finally figure out the puzzle. I'm like, oh, that makes sense. I'm just an idiot.
I feel
so much satisfaction from it that I keep going. And then it happens again. And I hate it again. And then I beat it. So
I love that we run the spectrum, though, because George just couldn't stand it. It's like,
but
almost
I also
guaranteed
I still respect it at least.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying like on our enjoyment, like you didn't like it at all. Like you didn't have a good time. You probably wouldn't recommend it. I complete opposite. Still very seriously, like probably game of the year for me.
Right.
And then Matt Visual right in the middle, like just the everyman, like the working man's opinion. Where like. Yeah, it's frustrating for several reasons, but I like it for several reasons. And
have you all finished it? I'm not going to get that experience.
Yeah, I have finished it, and I'm moving towards trying to 100% it
to complete Ooh. It. Okay,
you are a better man than I am.
I was literally at 3:55 p.m. George was like, "I'm going to be right back and grab some coffee, and then we'll start." And I was like, "Cool." And I opened the witness to play a bit more. So. And then at 4 p.m. we started the podcast. So
was it just you staring at a puzzle for the next 30 minutes until we started the podcast?
Yeah, I've gotten to the deep levels of obtuse John Blow shit to where I'm just like, I look at everything and I'm like, this is slightly broken on one side. Does that indicate something?
I still
and
haven't
then I just look around.
I still haven't looked at the ground hard enough, or whatever the hell you're supposed to do for the stupid leaf monastery thing.
Okay,
I did.
Oh,
okay. I haven't beaten it. So careful.
Okay.
The rest of the podcast will tell you that I'm an absolute stickler with.
Spoilers.
We still haven't fully talked about Undertale in any capacity.
Okay, understood. Totally, I understand. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to talk about it from like a ground level, like without going into detail,
yes,
like
yeah,
you can very much do that.
Well, I just feel that like it's a game that, I mean, I'm sure I'm just going over what others have said before me, possibly on this podcast, but it's just a game where it's like Liam phrased it in a way where he said it's a challenge from John Blow to you. And it feels like it totally feels like you're battling him. You know, like it feels like a mental like duel, and it's fantastic because you're doing these puzzles and, you know, sometimes the solution is the same, but the rules are different and you're learning from it. And it feels like every time you get stuck, you should be able to like wheel the mouse around to look behind you and just have him, Jonathan Blow, sitting in a chair staring at you, watching your every move, judging you, you know? And when you eventually do overcome it and like you solve whatever the convoluted language it's trying to teach you is for that particular string of puzzles, you feel like the smartest person in the world.
Yeah.
You feel like John Blow picked up his like two fingers of neat whiskey and like kind of like nodded slightly in your direction.
You know, like the sense of triumph is so strong, and it really is just like, oh, it's a series of puzzles and you just walk from one to the other, and the environment doesn't seem to be like even important or necessary until you find out that it kind of is for reasons that you discover.
Right.
Because otherwise this could have just been like, you know, puzzle two next on a menu.
Right.
You know, but they chose to make it an open, large environment that you discover and walk around in. And like that does a lot for it. And not just for the, you know, the crazy unveiling of things that you discover as you play, but also because the ability to like go fuck this area and everything it stands for, I'm walking over here, when you get frustrated is really satisfying.
Yeah.
I enjoy that.
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of moments when I did that, especially we were talking about this last week a bit, where you like the town in the middle.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
like if you happen to stumble upon that, like
in the beginning of the game.
Yeah, in the beginning, you're just like, what the fuck is all this shit? Like puzzle pieces and like colored stars and like fucking all kinds of shit. And it's just so overwhelming. And then you're just like, I can't even do one of these. And you just wander off into a different area. And then you're like, oh, it's the basic version of that.
Yeah, no, exactly. I wandered into the town as my second area.
Yeah. Same.
And I was in for a rude awakening, did what damage I could and went, clearly I am not meant to be here yet, you know, and then wandered back out. And yeah, like you can definitely tell that, you know, like 8 years he spent just fine tuning, tweaking, making sure that everyone can wander in the right way and still find their way to the finishing line.
Yeah.
Even if you don't complete all the puzzles, like I don't know what to say. It's just pure and it's just a joy to play, man.
It feels good when you kind of learn. Like he teaches you some of the puzzles are taught very well. Some others I will disagree with, but like some of them, it just kind of clicks because I guess I don't know, the way he explained it just clicks with you, and you just kill these puzzles and you feel amazing for it, you know. And I've never felt like this one, like you kind of feel like that, like, oh, no one went through this puzzle as fast as I did, you know. And then, you know, you find a puzzle that really like takes you for a run.
Can I take a guess as to why Bunny hates it?
Go for it.
Okay. Now, George, just from what we know, and I'm not to characterize too much, but if I had to take a guess, I would assume that in your opinion, there's not enough carrot so that when they're trying to string you along to the next puzzle, you don't feel incentivized. And I'm guessing that completing a puzzle for the sake of completing it is not enough to continue.
Did you watch the video?
I didn't.
Okay, because that's pretty much what I say.
I'm taking a wild stab in the dark
too.
And this is why I say that I respect it. Like, I see a lot of like similarities between the way The Witness is laid out and the way like Dark Souls 1 is laid out, where you can easily from the very beginning of the game wander into a place you're not supposed to be until the end of the game. And it's just like this series of masochistic challenges presented to you in a nonlinear order. But there's something so incredibly unsatisfying about just like clicking, like you were saying, puzzle number one that lights up a next panel it's glued to on top of puzzle number two, as opposed to like bashing a big dumb giant with a huge club that's super slow and huge. And I don't know, like there wasn't a carrot at the end of the stick for me. I was really, really bad at the kind of puzzles it was focusing on. All the areas I did unlock were the kind of puzzles that focused almost exclusively on the on just whatever was inside the puzzle board. I saw a huge amount of wasted potential if the game focused more so on environmental gimmicks than just like logic on the back of a cereal box kind of puzzles.
Bashing open a giant with a character, that type of game, generally your carrot is that the next giant you have to go bash, you'll feel tougher and stronger and have a better weapon or something like that. There'll be a sense of like leveling up.
Also, right? I don't know what's weird about me in particular, but I didn't feel smart playing The Witness. I felt dumb. And once I finished a puzzle that had stumped me, I just felt like, oh, maybe I'm not as dumb as a complete and utter moron. Maybe I'm just only slightly a bit of a moron.
Well, where I was going with that, because like, yeah, that feeling you're describing that I guess was absent for you, that's supposed to replace the feeling of leveling up and progressing. And that's kind of supposed to be your character. I found is the fact that you've internalized a new rule set and you've learned. Yeah, you feel like you, the player, has gotten stronger, better, you know, and you're more ready to tackle the next challenge kind of thing. And I feel like you also, there's a certain mood you need to be in to play The Witness for a long period of time. You definitely can't be in the same mood you'd want to be in to play something action oriented or like heavily competitive.
Yeah.
I feel like you'd want to be in the same mood you'd be in playing like an MMO or something, where you're kind of just like, I want to stimulate my brain right now for a while passively.
And the town is level 90, and you know, you're going in there as a level 1, you're going to get your ass beat.
And and you're just going to do your raids or your dailies or whatever the kind of thing is. Like it's a little bit of that mentality, but you know, or like sitting with your Sunday morning crossword. Right. And filling it out with your pipe and slippers. And then, you know, and then when you put it down, you feel satisfied. And then you start your day.
OK,
you know, it's funny that you mentioned it like that, just because like when the game came out and I was like doing my like daily bits of playthrough before I like got to like work stuffs, it was literally like I'd wake up, make myself like some black tea. And then like have like a steaming hot mug of black tea and just like get into this like zone in like a dark room in the morning before like the like hustle of the workday begins, and just like a relaxing little like witness escapade. And then like I'd finish it and then I'd go back to work and everything.
Okay.
Like,
if he could have released this game to newspapers, I'm sure he would have.
I think the reason why, like, because trying to review The Witness, you have this time limit. We talked about this last time, and I think like I remember George was we were both kind of on like a time schedule to finish The Witness, and I know George was like later than I was, right? Because I remember when we were in a Skype group, and he, you know, like trying to rush through The Witness, it drives you mad a little bit.
It's not the best way to experience it.
If you're playing like, you know, a couple hours a day or whatever, and you take breaks, then it's a little bit easier. Go on, George. You were going to say something.
Hear me out for another point, and this is why I don't think I want to 100% the game at all. And that is the way the map is built, or rather how little of the map is built. After getting out of the first intro keep and then getting stumbled at the very, very first black and white segregation puzzles, which I stopped at and gave up at, and that's how bad I am at this sort of thing. I ran around the island in a circle and saw pretty much everything. And the big carrot at the end of the stick, if it's not like some arbitrary numbers increasing on a character select screen or a really stupid story, like, I think when it comes down to me, I'm a very exploratory kind of video gamer. Like, I want to explore new places, and more often than not what happens when you solve a puzzle in The Witness is that another board lights up right next to the previous one that wasn't lit up, rather than a gate opening up to a new area, which does happen, but I like not enough. You can easily tour all of the game in the first hour.
First off, no. I'm saying that in a joking tone because I do respect that that's how you feel about it, that that's like what the world seems like. But one of my biggest things that I like about the island in particular is the use of space, because, and it's not a thing where I can be like, well, you just have to experience it like me, because obviously like that means nothing. Like, I can't tell you to enjoy it more, but in how I've played the game and how far I am now, and I'm on this like this hunt to find everything, I have found things like passages, doors, like whole pathways to like areas that existed in between areas that I've already gone to, that just like literally there was a place where I had walked by maybe 15 times because it's like a big path to get between two of the areas. And like one time I was walking there and there was just a big ass door. And I was like, where the fuck did this big ass door come from? Did I just miss this? And I explored like a whole cave that I just didn't know existed. And that was like yesterday. Hmm. And it's, I don't know, the sense of optical illusion on the island, I think, is super strong, because if you ever decide to like pick it up and keep going with it, George, there's a place that is characterized by a lot of bamboo. It's like a bamboo kind of forest area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That with the weird alien tree.
Yes. There are paths in there that I didn't discover until like I said last week. Like there, you just like, you can just walk by complete areas in there where it's just like, oh yeah, it's very well hidden, and maybe it's too hidden, but if you suddenly start knowing where to go, you like turn up into this like, oh, here's a rock that's slightly more green, and you just like, oh, and it leads me to a whole new place. Like it's pretty crazy. I like I said, sometimes it might all be too hidden, and I do agree that some of the teaching stuff is a bit obtuse, but I just enjoy that kind of puzzle. I enjoy puzzles that are like, it's not what you thought when you first started the puzzle. And I'm like, oh, it's not.
Yeah, that's why I started off by saying some people are going to play this game and they're going to be like, what is this? You're just drawing lines. There's not enough variety. Yeah. It's not missed, blah, blah, blah. And they're going to miss kind of the point. And there's a lot there, and there's a lot of secrets that I found. And yeah.
George, did you like Braid?
Yeah.
Did you?
I did it all in one evening too. Which
okay.
I don't know Braid. if that's apples and oranges. It's a much, much, much smaller game in comparison.
No, certainly. But no. That's not the question. The question is, did you like the stars in Braid?
I did not go for the stars.
I was going to talk about that. Yeah,
because it's not the comparison to me is not Braid. It's the stars is a more apt comparison between that and the Witness.
I did not give a shit about the stars.
Well, yeah. And there we go. Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing is I never invested enough to actually get them. I got the two that like pretty much everybody who knows about the stars, they know where they are.
Uh-huh.
The 2 hour one and the
cloud bridge.
Yeah, the cloud bridge and the overworld one.
Yeah.
But I did find one on my own one time, but I couldn't get it. And,
okay.
Like it was like in reach, but I couldn't get it. But like there is a significantly less driving force behind getting the stars than there is the puzzle pieces, because literally it's like, hey, there's a thing in my game, but I'm not going to tell you about it. And when you get it, you get nothing.
There's no achievement. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
The satisfaction is like you delved into my mind and like,
yes,
like unearthed this thing that I hid specifically for you to find,
which I respect. And I respect that the Witness trims all the fat, all the like superficial bullshit of video games away from its like core challenge. It's just the core challenge is not for me.
Right. Okay. That's completely fair, I think.
Because the star is like, yeah, there's no extrinsic value there. It's straight up what you have in the game for no reward for your own self satisfaction. Same as you, I kind of delved into it as far as I could. I didn't go for all of them, but I thought it was super fascinating that they were there. Mm-hmm. The Cloud Bridge in particular screwed me over because I didn't have a wired controller at the time. So it just, I couldn't possibly do it without the controller turning off constantly. And it was just silly. But anyway, I feel like a lot of the appreciation for that type of content goes into like the witness and you know, the ability to sort of deal with what Jonathan Blow is asking you to do.
Yeah, I found it fascinating. There, it's not the same in any way, but there are other like things like the stars that I not to that depth, but stuff like that that I found in the witness that it makes me uneasy that there are things that are more hidden than Braid stars.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some almost like what I consider to be like overtly saying, like just part of the game where it almost like overtly tells you like there's a lot of hidden shit and it might be really obtuse. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I want 100% this game.
But yeah.
I have a feeling that there's going to be like a 2 years later kind of thing where it's like Kotaku headline, some guy finds the deepest secret of the witness or something. And it's like cryptography. And oh, God. Fucking,
is it yeah, going to be yeah. like Fez where the final puzzle is just no one ever gets it?
Or
I don't know. I've never actually done the 64. Oh, you're talking about the like the very end stuff.
There's a huge black monolith in Fez that no one's figured out how to unlock. Yeah. That
or yeah. the Undertale stuff that requires not playing the game.
Oh
yeah.
We're entering a strange, brave new world where you know PC games that don't have to deal with console compliance stuff can well. I mean, Braid is a console game. It was a console game, but I mean, still, like with Undertale, the fact that there was all kinds of just. Wait, is this still a video game? There's a couple of moments of that. And yeah, like I feel like, you know, God, what was the other one? Sorry. The Beginner's Guide.
Mm.
I don't know if any of you guys had a chance to try that out.
Yeah.
I never played it. I know about it, though. I know like what it's about.
Yeah, that's a sort of another strange thing where you're just like, what am I playing? Is it play? Is this what am I doing? I'm experiencing something.
Right.
And it's very strange and it's an odd feeling, but I kind of like it. It's new and it's different. And I want to see where, you know, like games go with this kind of content.
The achievements list of the Stanley Parable was one of the great moments of the 21st century. Like some of the Steam achievements, I don't know if you know about this, but well, I think one of them is play the game on a Tuesday.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Right.
Quit
right.
The Stanley Parable, then open it again.
I don't. I'm a fan of like the fuck you to achievements that like we sometimes get.
Yeah.
From projects like that.
Do not play the game for 5 years without deleting the game.
Is that one?
8888 Enter 8 into the keypad 8 times.
Achievement. This is an achievement. Turn the achievement on in the options menu or whatever.
Yeah.
No, that's fantastic.
Okay, but besides The Witness, we've talked about The Witness for 3 weeks. Is there any other?
Yes.
What do we want to talk about? That's video games. Anyone? You sounded exciting. Excited.
I got the feeling that I was coming into an almost tired conversation with this, so I definitely didn't mean to drag that.
Like I think. We're not very traditional here. None of us play like a substantial amount of new games. Like,
okay,
I guess like George might be the one who plays the most.
I spent the
games,
past week trying to play Tomb Raider 2013 and could not get into it. I'm having a real hard time.
The
mons
are not doing it for you.
And the constant like impaling and the smashing.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, Laura just keeps going after like going through something that would have like killed Rambo three times over. I get like video games are supposed to follow like different rules in games and cutscenes. In games, she could smack into spiky things all the time and be fine. But in cutscenes, you expect there to be like a little bit more restraint. It's really weird and highlights the different rules that video game cutscenes follow compared to regular gameplay.
It's Laura Croft, you know, she's like the woman, the badass from, you know, like the 90s
and
stuff.
And one of the first scenes has you wrestling your way out of a trap and then falling onto a spiky pole. And I was like, oh, I thought I failed. And then, no, she just like gets back up, wipes the blood out of her bleeding internal organs and keeps on going. And
well,
I played
with a limp. She walks with a limp
for
after
like
that part.
30 seconds and then she's done. I was watching a scene last night where she was dragging a friend to safety. And while she was dragging him, she was putting pressure on an arm that had a huge open gash on it. And I was just like, no, you can't use that arm. At least, like, use the other arm.
Well, so, what happened to just enjoying video games, George?
I don't know. I made a YouTube channel.
God.
I don't know how much I can say here, but if you keep going through that game and eventually do hit some kind of conclusion, you may or may not see my name in the credits.
Were you testing it?
Yes. I've done extensive compliance work on this game. And so, like, I hear what you're saying, and I take it to heart a lot, especially since I've seen more of it than anyone can ever know. But I can say that, like, it's a direction for the franchise all in all that I think is a good idea. I think that I'm not sure how far you got into it.
Only like 4 hours in, I think, maybe three, actually.
Okay. Because it kind of goes a couple places, and overall, like, Camilla Luddington does a pretty good job being the new Lara Croft, I find. But its biggest flaw to me is the fact that this whole time you're going with the story is based on her being isolated. She's on an island, and you have to survive, get your friends together, and there's this creepy cult group that's trying to do something, who knows what, and you got to get away from them. And that would have been way more effective if you were on an island with like 30 other guys, maybe. But the fact that, you know, probably at the point you're at in the game, 4 hours in, you might have headshotted
already killed 200
people. Like, you know, if you can easily just slaughter your way through to the end. And it's just kind of like, this isn't a remote island at all. There was like a massive colony of dudes here. And like, I just murdered everyone. And it's just interesting because the original, you'll see some stuff that happens fairly soon, actually, that kind of hints at where this game originally was supposed to go. It was originally supposed to be a very survival horror type game.
Yeah. I think I would have liked that better. Like, the big problem I'm having is that it just doesn't feel like it has its real own identity gameplay wise. It is like the star example of a video I made a year ago that I think was called Game Design Trends in Modern Triple, something like that. And I talked about The Evil Within. Like, I was really looking forward to The Evil Within, and I wanted to play The Evil Within, and I played The Evil Within, and I was like, wow, this is like a whole lot of other games coming out, and that it's survival horror is like a flavor applied to the same kind of like modular action genre that seems to be fitting on everything else right now. And that's what's weird about playing Tomb Raider 2013 now, two going on 3 years later, is that it feels it's reminding me the most of The Evil Within.
It was there's a lot more survival horror in it, and they just they dialed it back and gotten rid of most of the like fantastical elements, but they kept a bunch of them.
But it still would work like an RE4 style shoulder shooter setup. It just kind of ended up getting that you add strafing to that, so it's not tank controls. You add QTE, so your character is like really versatile and powerful and can just shrug off getting stabbed by a rusty pole in the very beginning.
Visceral death cutscenes as well. Like, really, really brutal stuff.
Which looks like RE4, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
And that's a little depressing. I mean, I hear that Rise made a lot of improvements on the system and also kind of found its own identity. But that's what's most striking to me, was like, wow, this feels very 2013.
What is, I'll give it credit for this. The scoot into roll button, I think, is fantastic. And I wish every game had that. It's basically like you have a roll like you would in, you know, any other kind of action game to evade, but you have to double tap it to get the roll. And when you tap it once, it kind of goes into like a little baseball slide.
Yeah.
And then you roll from that. So you kind of get like an extended extended amount of invincibility frames for a moment if you time it just right. And that's a really fun element.
Try that again, because I do remember the baseball slide button. I was like, oh, that's a weird thing to put on the dodge button. But I did not know you roll if you press it twice.
Yeah, it's kind of like an advanced roll sort of feature, and I thought that was pretty cool. But in any case, it's leaps and bounds over where Tomb Raider was going just before that.
which is because it is a very different direction, like hard M after yeah. like this fairly lighthearted franchise about going on wacky King Kong style adventures. All of a sudden everyone's chopping each other up and cursing at each other, and it's so gray and dreary and rainy. And it's which makes it the second time Tomb Raider's gone for a dark, gritty reboot. They did Angel of Darkness
in
2002, which was still T, I think it was anyway.
But now they've got like set pieces like Uncharted to go off of, and in the second one they start taking references from Last of Us as well. So you can definitely tell they're pulling in from the outside world to try and reinvent Tomb Raider, but. Again, I feel like, you know, by the end of the experience, it's not that bad. And one thing you definitely want to do, I don't know if you will continue this, but if you do, play the optional tomb dungeons, because like there's no actual tombs in the game that you have to solve. But they're all little optional places, but they're some of the best content. It's okay. just yeah, room solving
puzzles.
That's
what Matt was saying a couple weeks ago, that for Rise of the Tomb Raider, they decided not to tack on a useless, stupid multiplayer mode and instead get the other collaborating team to just make more optional dungeons, which turned out to be his favorite dungeons. And I was like, wow, I like that direction in game development management. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's great. And like those optional dungeons, even they're in the first one too, and they're pretty good. So you know, take your time with that if you happen to continue with this, and if you don't, that's fine too. If you go check out those credits, you'll see.
Sorry, I'll look for Wooly in the credits,
and Liam is in there as well. So anyway,
what else we got?
I played Sonic 3.
Oh gosh, is that a pirate game? I didn't know it was a pirate game, Jimmy. yeah, I just thought. How is Sonic 3?
It's bad.
Yeah.
Just Sonic did the Hedgehog 3.
Sonic the Hedgehog 3.
Oh,
the game.
Jeez. Oh. Wow. Okay.
Is that the one with the casino spring that everyone got stuck on as a kid?
Yeah.
And Michael Jackson music.
Yeah.
Including everyone's favorite song. Go 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 go. That's like. I don't even remember what area that was. They all bled together in the end to me, but fucking some place where I felt like I was going backwards half the time, but I somehow ended up at the end of the level. There's a song that just has a sample of a guy saying go that's louder than every other part of the song, and it just plays the whole time like in like a rhythm.
Amazing.
Like it's supposed to be like a drum sample, but it's just a guy saying go.
Isn't this also the one with the like 3D Mode 7 style minigame where you're running around a globe that...
Yeah, it's actually the best part of the game.
Yeah, I like that one, I think. I mean, I guess I'd have to go back and play it, but that was my favorite old Sonic game.
It wishes it was Mode 7, but...
Blast processing.
Yeah.
I had the worst time, and I never want to play that game again.
So it doesn't hold up?
Well, many people will disagree with me when I say that, no, it doesn't hold up, and it's terrible. But
okay, I also don't like The Witness, so we're even.
Yeah. go back. It's like $5 on Steam to buy the Sonic 3 Genesis Simulator version.
Soon. I can't wait to make good on that video idea, reviewing the first level of every mainline Sonic game.
That's not fair, because that's the only level in that game that wasn't the worst.
That means it's going to be a fun video to make.
There's a level in Sonic 3 where it's like the whole thing is ice, everything is blue, all the enemies are also blue.
Oh.
Fucking.
I never got that far.
I'm going to stop before I go too far, and then we lose a lot of viewers, because I just I could not believe that everyone was like, it's the best one. And then when I was doing bad, people were like, it gets better when you memorize the levels. And I'm like, every game gets fucking better when you memorize the levels. Like, fucking Dark Souls gets easier and more fun when you, like, know what's going on. Like, fuck.
If you do, if you still have those urges and you feel like cleansing that palate, might I suggest Freedom Planet?
That's my whole Twitch chat was saying that when I was playing. Every new person who came in was like, you seem to be hating this. You might like Freedom Planet. I was like, yeah, I'll try it out. That's the like indie one that kind of was in the vein of Sonic games, right?
Yeah, it came off of a kind of, there was a bit of a collaboration project to have a bunch of fan-made Sonic games. Mm-hmm. And this was like the result of one. And it ended up being so good that it ran a crowdfunding campaign, made its mark. And then, we took a look at it on our channel, and it was supposed to be just a quick half an hour video, and we just didn't stop recording.
Nice.
And we turned this one-off into a full LP because we couldn't pull ourselves away from the game. It was that amazing. Wow. They just announced the second one is going to be coming out in 2017, and there's so much going on in these games that it's like, this is absolutely what Sonic wishes it could be today. You know, every modern Sonic game wishes it was on this point at this level. And it has like, there's a story with lots of voice acting and extra stuff in there that, you know, if you are down for that, that's cool. But you can also just pick an arcade mode and just sort of play classic stage to stage to boss sort of gameplay. And if you have any love for old Sonic and also a little bit of Mega Man and a little bit of Mario and just, you know, like in general, Rocket Knight, there's some Rocket Knight love in there. If you have any if you have any of that inside of you, absolutely grab this and try it out.
Did any of you guys
might have to do it one day
ever play the Sonic Rush games on DS?
Yeah,
no.
Those actually weren't bad.
Absolutely,
they were quite all right.
That was the first thought that came to mind when I was going to say, oh, you can just go play Sonic Rush to cleanse the palate. But even better than Sonic Rush was Freedom Planet. The Sonic Rush games, they actually made use of the two screens, and the Rush button was well done. Like, all in all, yeah, they were fun, man.
The thing that I kept saying, that I caught myself saying again and again when playing, was like, I don't think I'd be having as bad of a time right now if there was like three minor things that they cleaned up, because like my big problems were like, oh, all the like the levels kind of bleed, so like this level that you could be spending 8 minutes in, everything seems to look like you're in the same place the whole time. Like, that was my big problem. But like, if they pulled the screen out and just zoomed out a little bit, if they put spin dash and jump on two different buttons, I think it would be pretty fun, or like at least I wouldn't have been like hating playing it, because there were so many things where it was like, I jumped when I meant to spin dash. Why on a controller that had three buttons did you choose to use only one?
Yeah.
And there's like minor things that just built up into this experience that I just couldn't stand. Also, the reason that I stopped playing the game was I got to the end of Flying Battery Zone, which is the worst, by the way. And the end of the level, like the ship that you're in crashes, but you're on this platform, just standing there chilling. And if you happen to be standing there towards the center of the stage, you just get hit for free because Eggman drops out from nowhere with no indication. And I just got hit and died. And I was like, cool.
Thanks.
I'm not playing this again. Yeah.
So last but not least, I didn't mean to make it sound like that. But hey, Matt, what have you been playing?
it's OK. I've been playing more PSO. That's what you guys want to hear about, right? Phantasy Star Online 2. Yeah,
we might
often
actually
talk about MMOs on this channel. I mean,
yeah,
on this podcast.
Talk to Wally about PSO.
You're playing it in Japanese?
No, there's a big English patch. This is one guy who just sits there and just constantly patches the game every time a new patch comes out. Yeah, so it's actually playable, quite playable. I'm actually spent quite a bit of time the last 2 weeks in PSO2.
Is lag an issue?
No, not at all. Like, it's the weirdest thing. I've been enjoying myself. For some reason, it just tickles me in the right way, because MMOs have fallen out of favor with me. But I know what you're asking me for. You're asking me for Firewatch, which kind of reminds me of what Willie was talking about, because I actually played the Dragon Cancer, then right after that, I played the Beginner's Guide, because they're kind of in the same field, not in seriousness, but like, you know, of that experience of your experience in a game. And I feel like Firewatch is not necessarily exactly like those games, but it feels like it's in the same realm of you're just kind of experiencing a story. Yeah. And
dare we say the dirty words, walking simulator?
Well, it's not
I know there's stuff to do in it, but that's what it is.
It's kind of compass. If you turn off the option in the options menu, that makes your map not magic, which I really like. Like, I would love it if more open world games weren't just waypoint following and had like some navigational aspect to them, but it's like not really an open world game because it's all still corridors, even though they're big and look like the woods.
Yeah, I feel like by the end of it, I don't know if I can hold it up there with how I felt with those
really
other two games.
Out.
Yeah, like it there's a lot of suspense. I enjoyed it. Like I knew when I saw the trailer, I was like, I'm gonna play this game. I'm gonna buy this game and play it because I love the characters and I love when a game does characters properly. But then I can't say it's worth playing all the way. Like I enjoyed most of it, I'm gonna say. And I don't wanna spoil anything for it, but like I feel like there could have been a little bit more.
Yeah.
Does the sense of humor hold up over time?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes, it absolutely does.
That seems to be the strongest part from the trailers and from the first footage they released was not so much the exploration aspect as the writing and the communication between main guy and the tower girl.
Yeah.
Seems to just be hilarious and like you just want to kind of see more of that relationship.
They're a good duo. You got a straight guy and a wacky guy and they banter.
Yeah, and you choose which by the end it's not going to be an Undertale where you have multiple
ending.
And that's where it kind of falls off for me.
See, one of our buddies first was saying, I haven't talked with pretty much anybody about the game because I haven't played it yet. I'm not sure if I'm going to, if I have the time or the money, but he was saying that essentially he was having a great time talking with everybody else who played it. Because everyone else, based on their small decisions that they made, it gave them a very different perspective and interpretation of the ending, which I know nothing about the game or the ending or anything, but apparently like the big group that he was having discussions with, everyone kind of took it a different way because they all kind of played it slightly different in their decisions.
Cool.
Right.
Right. So I think that's pretty interesting.
I would say it's worth the time. Don't know if it's worth the money, but I had a friend over for one run through that we did on the couch in just like 3 to 4 hours. It was entertaining for the two of us, but it's still, I bet if you're by yourself, it the way the game ends might sting a little worse. Like it's hard to tell if the idea that they were going after is just kind of what's bitter and biting about it, or if they actually ended up having to rush things, which I think might be more likely, because there's some really weird stuff going on in like the map. Like I noticed things floating around in the air where they shouldn't be floating around. Some animation glitches, and it's weird seeing a game that short and focused being unpolished, which makes
how
me
long
think
was it?
About it took five, my first six. Run 4.5. Matt, how long was your first run?
I think it was five. I'm gonna say five. I'm gonna check the file now, but
so
I think
not
five.
Very long, not at
okay.
all.
Okay,
like 1-2 sittings max.
Yeah,
yeah. I'd like to give it a go. Maybe I'll be one of those PC gamers and be like, well, when the Steam sale.
Oh, also another weird thing about it. I got PS4 and PC codes for this one, which rarely happens. Well, it actually wasn't officially happened. I got a PS4 code from a friend, but and then the review code from the official people. But I've rarely like played a game side by side on both console and PC together and like, holy shit, the disparity is for this game in particular, it's huge.
For Firewatch?
Yeah, Firewatch has a way, way worse console version. Compared to PC, the PS4, it there's less grass on the ground and trees in the woods, which makes the game look like a fundamentally different thing than the PC version. When I loaded up the PC version, the very first thing I noticed was like, wow, there's actually more than one color on the screen, because on the PS4 version, which is a stylistic choice, like it's all about saturation is the style they're going for. But on the PC, you see a whole lot more extra little details, both from how much higher res the textures are and also just how many textures there are in general, because there's more items that are textured that are on the screen. And it like looks and plays different too, because it's a walking sim. It's all about looking at the clutter and finding out a story. And on the PC, I was able to like zoom in way more and read stuff by their handwriting rather than have the game display text
press
for
Q.
me.
Yeah,
right.
So that was interesting.
One last thing, like
sure.
It did take me 4 hours. It definitely feels unfinished, because it felt like you make a lot of decisions in the game, and the way you talk with characters, and there's a lot more decisions that, I mean, would be spoilers, and it feels like it doesn't go anywhere with it. And I'm wondering, maybe I need to do a second playthrough to see what you're talking about, Jimmy, because by the end of it, it doesn't feel like it comes together.
Okay.
It is satisfying to a point, but it feels rough. And it might be what he's going for, what the group was going for, the developers, that, you know, life is life type of thing, you know? And I don't know. I don't know. It's in a weird spot for me.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
One question, just not to roll back too far, but Matt, I just want to ask you about PSO2.
Yeah.
Over on the Friendcast, Liam and Pat have had what I think is a 3-year bet now going that this game is going to come out in the West or not.
Ooh.
Each year, at the end of each year, Liam has re-upped he's doubled down on his bet and said, oh, no, boy. it's gonna come out this year. It's gonna happen. And he now owes Pat a ton of money. Where do you fall on the is it gonna get localized?
Dude, Sega don't want to release debate. That thing. Like I feel like they're not gonna release it. They keep saying no, we're not gonna release it. They're bringing it to PS4. Like there was like news last year about that. Then they were like, no, we're not. We have no plans to bring it to the US. I just don't think it's gonna come here. And it, you know, on ship too, there's a lot of people, US people over there, you know, English speakers. Playing, and that's where the community's at right now, is that everyone's just on one server playing together, using like the PSO2 tweaker for people who want to know who wants to try it out. And they feel like it's not going to do well over here, and I think they're wrong. I think they're so wrong. It brings, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit nostalgia because I remember playing my Dreamcast, the original one,
absolutely. You
know, just playing that every night after school, man. And I don't know. It feels that nice casual to hardcore niche that the MMO market doesn't really fit very well. And I've played a lot of MMOs and it's like what you wanted Vindictus to be, like the US, you know, fantasy star. But yeah.
So you heard it here first. PSO2 dead in the water. Confirmed by Matt.
I would hope I'm wrong, but yeah. There's ways to spend money on, you know, buy cash and everything. Like they have everything is set up. Like he even translated the Android app. Like it's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's love. That's love for the game, man.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. But yeah.
Does The Witness be that nah, not The Witness. Does PSO 2 being accessible in the West and also heavily translated into English count? Or is that no?
No, it doesn't.
If you wanted to get
official,
like real semantic and technical.
No, that absolutely not. No. We're talking official acknowledgement from Sega.
Okay. Yeah, because the patch, I mean, some stuff is not translated. Only the important stuff, like the shops, some of the items, most of the items, I would say. It's not perfect, but it doesn't hinder you in any way. You understand what's going on in terms of what you need to do. But understanding, like, the tutorials, you might need to look up translations. Like, there's a bunch of guys out there that would translate it for you and tell you what to do. Because there's a lot of English speakers that play the game. Like, they're that invested. And I guess that's why, I mean, you have such a, you know.
No, it's nice to know that there's actually this, like, community that exists where I thought there was nothing, you know? So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's quite dedicated. It's weird. I don't know. It tickles me. It's weird. Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Not to throw off the planned itinerary, Matt, but did any of you guys try out Bayo in Smash?
No, I haven't played Smash in ages.
Not just yet. Okay.
No, there's money you gotta pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bought the pack. Right,
you know. You know how much I like buying things.
You know how much George likes fun.
Yeah. I remember when Ryu came out, I was like, come on, get it, George.
You.
Get it, George.
And you're happen? Like, no. I like Bayonetta. I like.
I'm just fun. Teasing you.
Okay.
Well, speaking of things I didn't buy that I wanted, did anybody try Unravel?
Uh-uh. No. Too much games are coming out, and I didn't
There's
get to play.
There's too much going on, yeah.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be the dead time of the year.
Right.
Christmas is supposed to be when all the fucking games come out.
Q1's busy this time.
sorry for cutting off your Bayonetta
you
thing.
You
I
got
just
the Witness,
to...
the Cancer
no,
Kid.
No, there's tons going on at this point, and Street Fighter V is around the corner.
Oh
like,
my gosh,
guys, it's going nuts. It's getting crazy over here.
God, and then we have Pokken Tournament next month.
Oh my god,
did we decide if it's Pokken or Pokken?
Next month, it's Pokken.
It's Pokken.
Okay,
because it's Pokemon.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And Tekken. So
yeah.
Okay. So anyways,
it's Tiki.
I'm still mad that game is not just all fighting type Pokemon fighting each other.
Well, if you can't have Pikachu in it, I mean, what's the it's not.
I know.
I'm only mad that there's two Pikachus in it.
American audiences want Pikachu.
We could have just had Pikachu in the Libre outfit and then replaced the regular one with Raichu, a far superior Pokemon.
There's going to be a costume pack for Detective Pikachu.
God,
yeah,
and Danny DeVito's voice.
That's a whole other fucking can
Lucha
of words.
Libre Pikachu, Desperate Housewives Pikachu. They could go places with this like genre Pikachu thing.
It was in the Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire games. You can get a cosplay Pikachu, is what it was, and it's a female Pikachu that can have one of five different costumes.
What if the Detective Pikachu is female? That voice they gave.
It's not.
No,
it's not.
Yeah. Okay. Very manly voice.
If you want the Pokemon nerd in me to come out, you can tell because its tail is the traditional lightning bolt tail.
God.
Wow.
Oh,
wow.
The female
wow,
Pikachu
wow,
has a heart shape at the end
you
of its tail.
You were going down
so
a hole.
I have been editing for a Pokemon channel for 3 fucking years. I know my shit, right?
So then how do you feel now that we have more than just a talking Meowth, but we've now got a talking Pikachu, and we know that these are sentient creatures that can totally be, like, they can converse and live amongst humans side by side as equals, yet still we have them fight each other, sometimes to the death, as depicted in the manga.
For amusement and money.
An Arbok and an Onix totally get murdered super hard in the Pokemon
manga.
Yeah,
that's right. There's a super graphic picture of Arbok being like cross-sectioned by, what is it, Scyther or something? Just like chops its head in half or something.
And now
very violent.
And now that we know that all we needed to do was just love them and teach them language, yet still we fight them to the death. How does that make you feel, Jimmy?
You know,
you're
I would
enabler
be lying if I said we haven't done maybe 5 or 6 videos that talk about that.
Oh gosh!
But
man,
that's
you,
just
go, you guys
Pokemon
go deep over there.
Theory.
The ducks.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching.
Thanks for listening. We'll be right back after these messages. Hello and welcome back to the TOVG podcast, your number one source for hearing about big companies shutting down and or almost coming to the brink of shutting down. The very first one on our list today is Game Trailers.
Wow, that was a really
wow.
Yeah,
sincere.
I don't know. Kind of like
way to introduce this subject.
But I didn't mean to cuz this is scary. This is like really scary cuz
Does it count if I didn't know they were still alive?
Is it
really shut down if I haven't been there in a decade?
Really? You didn't watch the Zelda retrospective earlier last year and like
no,
tune in for the pack attack and the Bossman?
I've got love for Game Trailers because they hosted the original Monty Oom cool action scenes, the Haloid videos and stuff like that. And,
I just found out that was him last week. I didn't know that was him.
Yeah. Before Ruby and before Rooster Teeth, like all of his original, not Source Filmmaker, but whatever, like 3D battle scenes were hosted on Game Trailers. And in fact, our two best friends stuff, like the first videos we made still exist up there in ghost form.
as well. They might not.
Well, I guess, I guess not anymore.
The bills don't get paid after because they shut down a couple days ago.
Man. Yeah.
I do think is really, really scary. Like, I'm sorry if I sounded like uncharacteristically upbeat, but you know me, I'm everyone's favorite curmudgeon who hates fun, right?
Right. Yeah, that's so true. Canon.
Whatever. But this totally came out of nowhere. They didn't know about it until the day of. So they had like some very, very like quick last minute events to commemorate the ordeal. One of which was to update their Bloodborne review to the only 10 out of 10 they ever gave, which I think is kind of weird, but also kind of funny. But I also kind of agree because Bloodborne's really fucking good. Oh, God, Bloodborne's so good. But anyways, and also had a teary farewell memorial stream where they all played Grand Theft Auto 3 and talked about starting the site. And basically, I don't think right now no one knows what happened. Because there hasn't been a lot of good stories about it. There should be. Maybe I should try to do a good story about it. Because what we do know is that they were purchased by Defy Media last year in the middle of 2014, who immediately introduced some layoffs towards the company. But at the same time, like, I don't know, like, Wooly, you said you didn't know they existed, but this was really surprising to me because I regularly, well, I mean, I can't say I regularly tuned in, but I think I want to say like I saw a good three or four videos on game trailers exclusives over the past year, and they were really good stuff. Like I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with it, but game trailers has always done like super top quality video reviews.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
I used to watch them way back in the day, Hey Ash, What You Playing? And I really enjoyed like I wasn't paying attention back in the day to the guy's voice who did game trailers, and I just really enjoyed the way he did his reviews back in, you know, like years ago. I mean, years ago.
I've heard nothing but good things about Pop Fiction. I think that's one of their shows, right?
I mean, you know, it's no disrespect to the good content that they may have had. It just wasn't on my radar after 2000 and maybe 8 or so. Like, I feel like
it was that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I feel like there was a shift, you know, like way back in the day you had your N64.com and Nuke.com and stuff. And then, you know, eventually when IGN and GameSpot were around, game trailers eventually got thrown into the mix. But there was a shift when, you know, we entered the Kotaku age. And at this point now, I feel like
Dark Ages.
Yeah. And at this point, I feel like I'm getting most of my information from like Silicon Era and Gematsu and Destructoid. You know, like those are sites I keep up with. But game trailers was one that feels like it was from a bygone age.
How the hell did game trailers close and Destructoid didn't? Like, I've heard way more troubling news coming out of Destructoid than game trailers. Like, game trailers just seem to be chugging along as normal, I thought.
Yeah, if it's not profitable, I guess it's just not profitable.
Their YouTube channel kind of shut down, didn't it? That's what happened.
Did it?
Yeah, like, not a lot of stuff is on there the last time I checked.
So who do we think is to blame here? Is YouTube to blame?
Konami.
I think there was that age where everyone kind of shifted to YouTube, and it happened to me as well. Like, I used to have bookmarks on all these sites, and then I just kind of it dwindled down to just a couple sites that I go to for some news, and then I would just be on YouTube and be busy.
So here's how old, like, I'm talking when we're going back with it to when this felt relevant to me. But you said they had a YouTube page. Now, the game trailers, I remember, their whole deal was they didn't use YouTube. They had their own player.
Yeah.
Are you saying that they eventually abandoned that and just started uploading stuff to YouTube?
No, I don't think they did. They did have a YouTube channel, but it was just like kind of for promotional cross social media purposes.
Okay.
They might have put up their reviews a few days later on their YouTube channel. I know that this Bloodborne review they updated is directly on YouTube and not on game trailers itself. But yeah, that was the thing. They would stream the Jeff Keighley Awards on game trailers. I don't know, like the whole Spike TV affiliation and Michael Pachter were kind of the weak links for me, but I've generally enjoyed their original content over the years.
It seemed like they switched to YouTube just like everybody else, because like even like on their Twitter they would show like their Twitch TV and YouTube page, you know, trying to get, you know, with what everyone else is doing. It was around that time where all the like sites were trying to shift to YouTube. You know,
well, I'm gonna bring up their videos and search for Bossman because the final Bossman, those are always fun. Yep, they're up here from a week ago, 2 weeks ago. So yeah, I guess they were reposting on the YouTube channel in addition to their own proprietary player on their own website.
And are people watching them?
Yeah,
people are watching them.
But the views are not bad.
Makes it kind of redundant because then it's just like, why would your viewers ever leave YouTube if you're putting the same content on YouTube? Which I think, like, I don't know, like you guys might sort of be able to have some insight on this because you also have, oh God, what's the name? You upload to a premium service a day ahead of time, right?
Yeah, we have Vessel.
Vessel, that's what it was called.
And okay. You probably don't want to talk about the numbers, but I imagine there is some kind of like conflict between two groups of viewers going on there. And I bet one of them's not very large.
The truth is, because we also have our own like website that, you know, is not YouTube as well. And like there's some benefits to being able to hosting things off YouTube. But ultimately, yeah, YouTube is the main thing. And anytime you're trying to get people or you're asking people to watch something that is not on YouTube, it's like a struggle because it's YouTube is easy. It works. It's comfortable. Everyone's used to it. And it's a part of a lot of people's daily routine to just go through their sub list and see the updates. So, we definitely have seen that, like, you know, going off of YouTube onto other players is it's not something that you're really going to get anywhere near the same amount of people coming to check your stuff out. And again, if game trailers, if that was their bread and butter, you know, was getting people to watch their footage and download trailers directly from them instead of going to any other source, then I don't know. I guess the original content was all they would have to really compete with.
Viewership
would
have gotten absolutely slammed. And their YouTube channel, it's not bad. They're getting about like 30 to 50,000 views per video. They have 500,000 subscribers, which wouldn't be bad for a much smaller operation. I mean,
for a one man, that would be
That would be super good. That would easily pay for your living. Just mine pretty much is right now. And But when you have like 18 people trying to like put together something competing with cable TV with your Jeff Keighley awards and your Spike affiliation, that's just not enough of those numbers just aren't high enough, which is also the same problem that Rev3 was having. They were putting out great content that people loved, but there just simply wasn't enough in order to pay for the amount of people and the kind of people they were keeping on staff.
Yeah.
It feels like to do well with a game related site like these days, you need to offer a lot more than, you know, I guess the amount of original content they had. You probably need to be mostly original content while also covering footage reviews, quick looks, new news breaks and things like that. You probably have to be like closer to Giant Bomb or, you know, to some degree, even the Escapists. Like they have so much original content that people are going to be tuning in there to get it's the only place to get a lot of their content.
Giant Bomb's a really interesting case. I wonder how they do it. They have a premium subscription service. They have super duper long videos. They're so long that I almost think they wouldn't have done as well if they started as a YouTube channel instead. And they're also like renting out this office in San Francisco next to GameSpot that's part of CBS and are putting out stuff that doesn't look expensive at all to put out.
And now they're part of GameSpot again, sort of technically.
Are they? I mean,
yeah,
I know that
there was a repurchase in there somewhere.
Officially they weren't, but unofficially, when you actually look at the content and who's showing up where, there was a lot of mingling going on between the two. I didn't know there was anything in the writing that actually further brought them together.
I'm not 100%, but I do believe there was some kind of acquisition or repurchase type thing because, of course, you know, Giant Bomb was born from Gerstengate and like, you know, I guess over the years, like some of that bad blood must have like, you know, thinned out a little bit. But yeah, whatever it is they are doing, it works for them and it seems to be working extremely well because they just moved to a new office and, you know, like it seems like that's the way to run an online video game general based blog thing.
The difference between regular ordinary video games media and us YouTubers is that we don't have offices most of the time. Jimmy's in an office, and Wooly, you're thinking about getting an office, right?
We're thinking about it, and we're wondering if we can get an office. It's a pipe dream still.
The TOVG is in an office because it's not just TOVG. It's also Jesse Cox and Dodger work out of the same office space. And like, the shared space that like we all have out there. I mean, I work from home mostly because gas is fucking expensive and it's an hour drive. So like not a thing that I want to do every single day. And if I can work remotely, I will. But office environments are great. But I mean,
they're really expensive.
They're really expensive, and like the tiny office that TOVG is based out of is also has two other YouTube forces behind it that help make that like rent not a fucking like massacre on everything we bring in. Whereas like the last office space that we were in alone was like practically the size of my apartment for 8 people or something. And so office spaces are not easy to be running unless you really have your operation like locked down, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, at the same time too, like what's our output compared to say Giant Bombs or The Escapist? It's like,
I bet
you know,
you guys might be close to Giant Bomb. Like it was a little weird the moment when I did a Pillars of Eternity review last year, and after a few weeks, it ended up having more views on YouTube than the IGN review. And I was like, whoa. And at the same time, I get that that's the YouTube review. There's probably millions more eyes on their actual webpage than on their YouTube video review. But it's we might be closer in pure analytics and statistics than you think.
Mm-hmm. It's always weird to see that they you know, because it's a group of people. You know, like I always wonder about College Humor and how they have so many people working at their office and they have that one little channel. And I'm just like, there's no way you're making enough money. Like you, and then you see, of course, you see the what people you know consider selling out, and you have those stuff because I mean they kind of need to pay a lot of people that work there.
Well, yeah, I mean, the difference between something like Giant Bomb and College Humor, and I granted I don't keep up with many gaming news sites or whatever, but like despite how big or small College Humor's team is, like just looking at a cursory glance at their like recent videos, I'm seeing within the past few days 250,000 views, almost a million, almost a million, almost a million, farther back almost a million, 4 million, 3 million, and then you have to count in they probably have brand deals in there, and the bigger your channel is, those brand deals, they pretty much ramp up exponentially. Like,
well, yeah, that's a crazy number, but I mean, when you're coming from like when websites used to be the biggest thing ever, I mean, that's all we used to do. That's all I used to do is websites. I used to play Flash games and all that type of stuff, you know, old school stuff. And now, like, it seems like maybe all the advertisers, I know, like a lot of YouTubers, they get into this now with, you know, who's selling your ads, and maybe you can make more with this and blah, blah, blah. And maybe you put your own ads, and like that type of stuff affects them. And all the ads are like coming to YouTube because it's like easy eyes.
So, it wouldn't, it's sad, but it also wouldn't surprise me at all if a lot of the same people from Game Trailers put out more or less the same kind of shows on their own on YouTube within like the month.
I would hope that they can find some sort of stability to allow them to do that.
That's the logical destination, I think, as well. I mean, although when you say that, like, we're closer than you think in terms of just like
viewer ship size.
Yeah. And stuff. It's I don't know if that makes me feel any better, because it's like they still have that office and I'm still sitting on this uncomfortable couch right now. You know, I'm still like some guy in his room.
Oh,
yelling
you got
to
get a do a chair mic review. They'll send you a free chair.
You know, like we're competing, really? Where's my office? But it'd be cool if some of the talent definitely went their own way and, you know, just found an audience.
And in terms of their individual salary, they might end up making about as much, if not more, on their own on YouTube and Patreon than working for Game Trailers. Maybe
it has been successful. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I'm still waiting for the great the great Patreon cataclysm to happen, because I feel like Kickstarter had one, like Patreon is bound to get it eventually. It seems all fine and dandy now, and like I'm seeing a lot of friends have a lot of great success on Patreon. Like people like Jordan Underneath, who like based on video, like channel size and video views, pretty much making, you know, almost nothing based on ad revenue, but his people supporting him on Patreon make it a full-time job for him. Stuff like that is really cool, but
holy crap. You're right.
Yeah. He's doing just very well for himself.
His
audience loves him, and I hope that these guys can find something similar, but I'm also hoping that Patreon doesn't see a massive downswing in the next year, but I'm afraid that it might.
Well, I feel like the Kickstarter and Indiegogo type, if there's a cataclysm to come, it'll just be from large individual projects failing and not necessarily on a platform level. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I feel like something like Patreon, it's probably here to stay, if not in the name Patreon, then at least in the idea.
Also,
yeah, I feel that.
Relevant observation, you said large projects collapsing, Patreon's not for large projects, so like even there's like less viability or less liability.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'd say the largest thing that I know of on Patreon is probably Jimquisition, right?
Yeah, and that's just like a lot of really small videos, like,
or maybe Team Four Star.
It's hard to say. Wow, Jimquisition really dropped the ball with his crowdfunding money in the same way that you might say Double Fine has, right.
Or KG Inafune.
Yeah.
I was gonna say Smooth McGroove, I think, as well is a pretty big Patreon guy.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
And
the comedy button with Max Schofield.
With it being smaller projects, there's more opportunity to satisfy more people. Mm. So yeah, it seems safer, a lot safer.
Yeah, I guess it's harder for a Patreon to crash so much because it's like people stop liking how you're doing it. They can just kind of
opt out.
Yeah, and then you can realize, and then like direction can be changed immediately, as opposed to Kickstarter where it's like all in, and then if it fails, it's all fail. So, I don't know. Okay. Interesting.
Anyways, God, we should move on real fast.
Right.
Yeah.
Kind of
prod us. Cattle prod us along if you need be.
Second big company, not closing, but at the verge of it, maybe, is Mad Catz. They had their CEO and chairman resign just one day before they had to announce a fiscal report, which turned out to not be brimstone. They actually were up more year on year than they were last year. However, they ended up having a lot of issues staying profitable because of a shitload of promotional deals that apparently had them selling Rock Band 4 at a loss, and also overproducing. They couldn't keep up with productions, and a lot of the financial troubles that they're having are actually more related to like inventory stock than the actual numbers on the paper. Which is weird because they still had the top level like leave a day before this report came out. Mm. Anyways, apparently, Rock Band 4 is doing fine, but just not nearly as fine as the people behind it want it to. They laid off 37% of its staff the day the reports came out, and I think that's all I got on my bullet points here.
It's weird. It's so weird to me because I see Mad Catz through the fighting game community lens. Mm-hmm, and that's how my perception has been of them for like the last, 7 years or so.
And they're generally known as being like good quality fight sticks.
Yes. Mm. I mean, prior to that, 2009, they were
bad quality controllers.
That's my view of Mad Catz for the longest time because I fucking got a GameCube in 2001, and my parents got two extra controllers, and one of them was this bulky plastic monstrosity of a Mad Catz controller.
That was George's view too. I remember him. Yeah. I remember telling you, I was like, dude, get a fight stick from Mad Catz, and he was just like,
and I was
what?
Like,
Mad Catz.
Yeah, I thought you were joking with me.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just the worst. And then, the I guess Markman era happened where Mark Giulio joined and like they started working on the fight sticks using the right parts, and they created a proper niche for themselves where they're like, these are quality North American sticks you can buy and like get at a decent price. And from that, it feels like they almost reinvigorated and like those fight sticks kept them alive, you know? And now to hear that they're not doing great, especially because of Rock Band stuff and whatnot, it's just a bit baffling, because everyone thought, at least again from a fighting game point of view, thought that they were doing totally fine. They're rolling out a whole new set of Street Fighter V sticks, you know?
Release date,
And the timing is also really weird because at the same time that this news came out, I believe it was one day before the leak that Street Fighter V was going to support old Mad Cat sticks for PS3 360 generation. Sorry, PS3 generation.
Yeah.
So that you didn't necessarily have to go and spend money on the new products they were putting out if you already owned it. And it felt like this was news that was possibly kept under wraps in order for the pre-release hype to hit a fever pitch and to have everyone go out and buy their new sticks.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I certainly went out and did that. Because once I heard that news, I was like, oh, I might want to get one from Amazon for half the price, get like the original tournament one for PS3, you know, and do that. But like after hearing this, I feel like I kind of want to buy a new one. Just and because I don't know. I know, like, oh, you know, it's money, Matt. You shouldn't think about that. But like, I don't know. Like, I feel like Mad Cats, I've bought so many of their stuff that I don't want them to go underground. I doubt that my little $200 is going to save their company. But yeah,
You know, they eked out $250 from me for like this new PS4, PS3 backwards compatible stick. But like now that the news is out, especially that no one really needs to go out and buy them.
Yeah.
I don't see how they're going to survive, you know, like this. Like, I don't know what to do at that point.
I wonder if I guess this is like a really obtuse thing for them to do, but I wonder if they will have any part in future VR compatible peripherals.
Oh God. Having to like deal with a shitty off-brand Mad Cats VR controller.
This is what you guys wanted. I don't get it. We had this whole conversation of you guys bashing me to the ground for VR stuff. And, $600 and now you don't want the cheap knockoff ones?
$600 is such a wake-up call. It's.
I'm not talking about an actual VR. I don't think they're going to do like Mad Cats the VR headset. I'm talking about like
a case for your like your Samsung phone or something like that.
No, more like controllers that interact better with VR, like the fucking the things that I always forget. I can never remember
HTC
them. Like
wands.
Yeah, those like stuff in that vein. I wonder Mad if Cats they're going touch. To have any part. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to say like that, you know, as long as they're sticking to hardware, I think, you know, that's the right thing. Because I'm not sure how much money was burnt on the Mojo project.
What was that?
But, okay.
Yeah, I've never even heard of that.
Yeah. So that's the thing is while we were talking, I was just like, wait, whatever happened to the Mojo? The Mad Cats Mojo it's a micro console for Android that they released on their own. They made their own like Ouya / Amazon
that
Fire
totally
style.
Slipped under me. God. How the hell have I not heard of this?
They made a console. Just take a look, and you'll
I'm
see.
Looking.
It's awful. It's a terrible machine that has nothing going for it, and I don't know why they decided that this was a thing to invest in a couple years ago. But surely that must have had some impact.
I'm looking at this wonderful spread page on their website where the blurb is. The Mojo is a fantastic Android micro console and media device from Micromart.
Yeah, it's just
sounds like a robot wrote that.
Yeah, it's so weird. You know, they rolled this out when Android boxes were hot. You know, and they I guess again they wanted to compete with Amazon and all these others, and I just feel like this it never had a chance.
I think people really did not think very well ahead of time with this. Like, no one wants to play games. What people want to do is be able to watch Hulu and stuff without putting their PS4 in the living room. You see what I'm saying? Like, they want to watch, like, you know, MP4s or whatever. Like,
they just want to watch Best Friends.
Yeah. Like, they want to watch YouTube and stuff. Like, they don't want a game on, you know, on a little console. They could do that on their phone. And most people have, like, these crazy iPhones and Samsung Galaxy phones, they have a good screen. Like, it's fine.
Yeah. And if you bought a TV in the last, I don't know, 5 years, it probably has smart TV capabilities.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
All that stuff is built in anyways.
Apple TV, you know? Smartphone TV both kind of blew up, whereas all these little Android boxes didn't.
Yeah, you know, Chromecast as well. Yeah.
Chromecast, right. That was the other one I was trying to think of.
Roku or something like that?
Roku.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. TV boxes, Android TV boxes, all fine and good. Android TV gaming boxes,
Yeah, it's funny because at this point in time with, like, Chromecast and everything, I see Roku as, like, the like, mom and dad option of Chromecast. Because, right. Like, that's, like... You know how like some parents will be like playing the Nintendo, but it's like it's an Xbox or it's a whatever, but they just consider all video games the Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like my parents consider all like streaming things the Roku.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So I'm gonna cattle prod us into the very last topic, and that is Ubisoft acknowledging, confirming that there is going to be an Assassin's Creed break year in 2016, except not really because they're still putting out the movie. And they're also looking back to re-examine the franchise, particularly with feedback based on AC Unity. So it's like they know all about what people think of this franchise right now. Mm. The actual quote is, since the release of Assassin's Creed Unity, we've learned a lot based on your feedback.
Mm. Since release of Assassin's Creed Unity, you've yelled at us quite a bit.
Yeah, and it's
bring
like, yay, they
back
get
Desmond.
It. Really? You want Desmond back?
I'm the only one. I don't care. I love the Desmond story.
Okay, well, fine. I don't like The Witness. You can like Desmond. There you go.
That's going to be the placeholder for all disagreements in the future. I don't like The Witness, so you can like that thing.
We're even. You know what? Matt, I'm kind of on your side. Because Desmond was, it was dumb, but at the same time, that storyline building to a modern day war was what I was hoping for, and we never got that.
Yes, dude.
I didn't think
it was going to become a franchise. I thought it was going to end with Desmond doing some cool stuff in the future world, but no.
It kind of fucking leads you into that at the start of AC2.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Like,
yep.
Yo,
it's like they totally stopped.
You got this shit buried in your mind, and you're
going
to unlock
ancestors.
It. Yeah, yeah, exactly that. And then, like, the rest of the game, you're brooding Italian Ezio, who's, I guess, probably one of the better assassin main characters.
Yeah.
But
then they introduced... Daniel Cross, the guy from the side books, the Assassin's Creed Russia comic, which is really good, by the way.
I've never even heard of that.
Wow.
There's a comic. It's Assassin's Creed. Takes place in Russia. It's like dudes running on the Kremlin, and they've got these awesome like assassins. It's one of the only things that's actually really good.
You guys
about the side stories
might have missed it, but AC Chronicles Russia just came out or is coming out.
Yep,
and they
that's
totally
what it's based on.
Don't mention this in this Ubisoft blog. And in their first few sentences, they have some like celebratory back patting. What back patting about people enjoying AC Syndicate and how you should look forward to the movie coming out on December 2016. Before saying yes, we are going to take a break. We're looking at what to do with this franchise. We hear you. But they don't mention the Chronicles games, which people seem to like better these days than the full build console releases.
Is that the impression that you got? Really?
I mean, they're not as expensive. They don't seem to be troubling people as much. If it's like a lighter version of Mark of the Samurai, then that's at least like. At least more unique than what is the template for the reason I don't like Tomb Raider.
In my world, in my corner of the world, it felt like the Chronicles games, or at least the first one, was very poorly received. I didn't enjoy it much. China,
yeah, it was very poorly
received.
I
was really looking forward to like something that felt like old Prince of Persia, and you know, perhaps with some elements that were Metroidvania-esque, you know. But we just got something that feels awkward, looks awkward, felt awkward, and it sucks because the mainline series, I've had franchise exhaustion for years now on it.
Yeah,
you know, so it feels almost like Watch Dogs, had it not like tanked the way it did. Mm. She could have been the tag team, you know, like the tag off series that they could started running with. But like
the Black Ops Modern Warfare kind of switched back and forth kind of deal.
Yeah. But that didn't happen.
Ubisoft All-Stars Brawler.
You know, as we always describe it as like you're watching the Watch Dogs trailer and you're like, oh, my God. Yeah. We're getting there. We're doing it. And then the moment he pulls out a gun, everyone's face just drops and goes, God fucking damn it. You had it. You had it. And you just dropped. You fumbled the ball at the 5-yard line. You know,
I'm kind of surprised. Like, I guess I've just been kind of consciously ignoring Assassin's Creed. Aside from like joining in on the in jokes about whatever nasty new bugs or tower climbing is in the new one, but I'm surprised that Ubisoft hasn't teamed up with Telltale for like an Assassin's Creed story game.
Oh boy,
I feel like that might almost be refreshing, even though I'm sure we're all sick of just hearing the words Assassin's Creed. Like, just having it not be the fucking, you know, the template with some new names and places
I'm interested in playing the Syndicate game or the Chronicles games, because it's like at least not holding down two buttons to do everything or just spamming the counter button to do everything when it's in combat mode.
But I mean, like, I don't know, I guess this is kind of a bad example because it didn't do very well, but when Halo was kind of not stagnating, but it was definitely getting to become a lot after Halo 3 and then ODST and then Reach, they just dropped Halo Wars and it was like, oh, okay, like an RTS? Like, sure, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of enough to just break it up to make it feel like Halo could, like, Halo Wars is not like the best game ever.
I
thought it was fun, but it's not a great game. But
it's not formulaic to the others that came before it, so it just feels refreshing.
Yeah, even though I maybe Telltale's a bad direction for that anyway, because I guess a lot of people are getting sick of Telltale games.
That's kind of what I was going to say is, like, I mean, I get the example of like, an adventure game, but people are kind of getting a little bit tired with that. And at the same time, now that Don't Nod did it with Life is Strange, I feel like Ubisoft would just, they'd do it in-house if they were going to do an Assassin's Creed adventure game. They wouldn't team up with anybody. They've got like over 10,000 employees. They'd probably just take a stab at it, you know?
I think it'd be cool if instead of doing the Chronicles series, which to my knowledge is kind of just like the same general gameplay. Yeah. Or is it different? I don't know much about Chronicles.
It's very different. It's 2D. It's
side-scrolling.
And like it's more stealth in a kind of I don't know what game to compare it to sort of way, but it's a different type of feel than the mainline games for sure.
Did you ever play Mark of the Ninja, Jimmy?
Mark of the Ninja, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no,
that's
the
milestone people jump to.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to wrap us up by saying super duper quickly, Hideo Kojima started a YouTube channel, which sounds interesting, but I actually checked it out. It's kind of nothing at the moment. It's him and a friend talking about their favorite movies, which I'm sure is interesting, but I don't fucking know what they're saying because the subtitles go away after 5 minutes.
Because the subtitles were crowd made. All the subtitles that you see at the start were from people who speak Japanese and English contributing user-submitted subtitles. So, theoretically, they might be filled out by the time we talk about this or by the time this goes up.
Either way, but I'd like to know more, but right now I don't think there's more there. So, in the meantime, you should watch our YouTube channels instead.
Feels like Hideo is just a dude that had a lot to say that couldn't say anything. Until now.
Yeah.
And now that he can, he's like, I want a talk show.
Just enjoying some creative freedom.
Yeah, the format of this is extremely intriguing. It's like Hideo Kojima aping Red Letter Media, like him and a friend just talking about movies on a chair.
It's totally like, it looks like a Japanese TV show. They like have their little set and like credits and stuff come up at the start. My favorite part is, I screenshotted this and tweeted it because I thought it was so funny, but talking to his co-host, they put like the annotations and stuff up and everything. And he's like, and this is, and like, if you want to see more, you guys should subscribe to this channel. And he like points at the button that shows up on screen, and his friend's like, yeah, it's going to show up and we're going to link to it. And he's like, okay, so people need to be clicking this. And he's like, yeah. And he's like, so this will decide my fate. And I was like, you already understand. You understand so much.
All they're missing is the little like P&P corner celebrity face camera that they have on Japanese TV.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
So while they're watching their movie
Japanese
clips, you see
TV
his face.
Was like way ahead of that on the ball before YouTubers figured it out. Like, have a camera of people reacting to things as weird shit is happening. That'll yep. engage the viewer and make them react well. Anyways.
And why read your comments below the video when you could overlay them onto the video? That's what Nico Nico does and what Japanese TV does. They just have streaming feedback comments over the footage as well.
Why do you think he did this on YouTube instead of Nico?
Because he's a smart man.
But it's not for the English language audience, and Nico but
I think he knows that the English language audience has a lot of interest in him as a person and in saying fuck Konami.
Yes.
And so anything he does, people will be like, I want to know what Kojima's doing now.
Exactly.
Anything he has to say.
It doesn't even matter if it's in Japanese. It doesn't matter. I'm going to like the video.
There you go.
Yeah.
All of his professional friends that he's like taking pictures with, you know, David Cage and J.J. Abrams and Guillermo del Toro, they're all, you know, people that would probably catch him on YouTube sooner than log into Nico Nico.
Right.
You know, it feels like he's just gotten used to the Western side of things.
Anyways, it's going to be really interesting seeing if he tries doing the Koji Bro video updates that they did leading up to MGS5. Remember those?
They were
fun sometimes. They were like 40 minutes long, but that's where you would have some crazy events happening, like Stephanie Justin debunking crazy fan theories. She just like went through a sandwich board with like Chico is quiet pasted on it, and she just shake her head and be like no, and then there would be some Japanese subtitle underneath.
Actually, I would love to see Kojima do something like Iwata Asks or something to that effect. I think it'd be cool to get his perspective into the design area of the industry, not so much
kinda,
the industry area.
Kind of what they were trying to go for with their like own in-studio Koji Pro videos that they were putting out on a fairly regular basis. But anyways, besides that, I mean, there's not much on this channel for now, which means you should instead check out the best friends, right, Wooly?
Hey, we have some stuff. You might like it, but you may probably not.
Where is your stuff?
If you go to youtube.com/superbestfriendsplay, you'll see some videos. And also, yeah, we got a vanity name now.
Nice.
We have a website at that same thing.com. That's the superbestfriendsplay.com. But then there's a Twitch channel. If you just Google Super Best Friends Play, you'll see the stuff.
It still says the Switwuncher on the title of the Switwuncher.
Don't worry about that.
I don't know what that is. Jimmy, where's your stuff?
You can find my stuff at youtube.com/sundergamer or on Twitter at sundercr, which is where you'll pretty much find if I do anything else, because I do other stuff. I stream and I make music and whatever. That's where it's easiest to find me. Follow me on Twitter.
Matt Visual, what do you got to plug?
youtube.com/djkhaled, because no one got the jokes
last time.
I had to look him up.
I can't believe you guys.
You're loyal.
Yes.
I appreciate that. Buy yourself a house. Buy your mom a house.
Is this like a black people thing? Why did Jimmy and I not know it, but Matt and Wooly do?
Be the best.
Dude, everyone knows about DJ Khaled. He's a legend, man.
All I knew was the you is smart, you is important. That's the only thing I've ever known about DJ.
Say my name, baby. All he does is win.
All he does is win.
Yeah, dude.
Wait, is that the guy? Is that his song?
All I do is win?
All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Hate that song.
I think he has a lot of annoying songs, but he's the guy who shouts in the beginning of those songs saying, DJ Khaled,
Wait a
okay, minute. So he's like, he's just like a more positive Lil Jon then.
Yeah, it's he says all that stuff.
Yeah,
he's a hype yes, man.
That is his song. So yes, it's
okay. Cool.
Yeah,
it's, I can blame him for every shitty like DreamWorks esque animated buddy right. film.
So he's very animated gifable.
Next time I want to watch some Matt visual, I'll just go to youtube.com/DJ Khaled.
It's fucking youtube.com/MattVisual.
I've been working on the jail story for quite a while, so that will be coming up before I go to MAGFest. And working on Metal Gear Solid. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-oh. Actually getting details from my wife and how like what happened to her as I got put in the car and everything. So I'm finishing that up. And then I'm doing Metal Gear Solid and Firewatch. So hopefully I can finish all that up before I go to MAGFest and have some fun.
Good luck, man.
You're not coming,
I
Jimmy?
I don't see anybody there. No,
oh, my
can't
gosh,
believe
Jimmy.
You.
But in the meantime, if you're not going to MAGFest, which is February 18th through the 21st, you can watch a stream somewhere. Follow my Twitter for it. On the 20th, there will be some sort of indie game charity stream that I'm on.
Yay.
And, nice.
As far as I know right now, I'm going to be playing The Witness and interviewing Jon Blow on said stream.
I have to watch cool. that, man. I have to watch that.
So we'll see if that happens. I hope it does. And I have no idea what to ask
when
him,
we do
but...
the podcast again, you'll be able to tell us all about it because we won't be doing one next week because of
that's
MAG.
True. Right.
So until then, rate us 5 stars on iTunes, share us around to your friends. And
yeah, and since we're not going to be here next week, go follow us twice.
Follow us. Yeah. So you don't forget. Cause you
yeah,
might
go subscribe to Wooly. Twice.
Make an alt account.
Yeah.
Open all their videos in separate tabs and let them play
leave
out.
The same comment under 2 different accounts. No one will suspect
Sick.
A thing.
Awesome.
Tell
also, come
DJ
out to
Khaled sent you.
Yeah. Yes. No, but also come out to MAGFest if you can because it's going to be crazy. We're all going to be there. It's going to be a big party.
Are you guys doing
fun.
A panel?
Yeah, totally.
Sweet.
Nice.
Wish I can go... I'll see you guys at some future con.
Well, I mean, you are going to be with Jon Blow, so
yeah
that's
pretty
like a good silver lining.
Yeah, yeah.
A scheduling conflict that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
apparently, Big Papa KG himself will be at MAGFest this year.
Yeah, I'm afraid for his life.
Oh no.
I'm not
afraid for his life. I'm afraid that someone is going to just make Kotaku headlines.
Yeah. Something awkward. I'm afraid for his awkwardness.
Is he having a panel?
Probably.
Oh no.
Does he know what MAGFest is? This isn't GDC. It's anyways. But yeah, we gotta head out.
Yeah.
We have schedules to keep track with. I'm doing a stream in 10 minutes, so I gotta go.
Oh my
go.
God. Okay.
Go have fun playing
Bush.
Rainbow Six Dads.
I will. Yeah. And give Rainbow Six Dads a chance.
Yeah.
It's been an honor and a pleasure, guys. Thank you for having me on.
It has been for us as well. A lot of fun. Thank you, Wooly. Bye.
All right, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Bye.